Canva presents unexplained appearances. It was an ordinary workday until...
That presentation appeared out of thin air.
Also, it's eerily on brand.
Wait, did that agenda just write itself?
Words appear, making this unexplainable case...
Unexplainable? It's Canva's AI tools.
I can generate slides and words in seconds.
Really? The real mystery is why I'm only learning this now.
Canva.com. Designed for work.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs, who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.
All right, this is recording 025 WAV file. Testing, testing. I still feel like I'm a little bit loud, so let me move this back.
So it's mostly about making sure that you qualify the user in the right way, so you put them in the right category, and they're being assigned the right level of required KYC verification. There's nothing I hate more than being asked for additional verification once I complete the transaction.
Right.
I feel like I'm like super happy. I complete the ID scan. I'm good. I paid. Waiting flow, and then it's like, oh, we need a bit more from you. So we're trying not to do that. We're trying to evaluate how much we're going to need from the user and let them know early on, let them know upfront what's going to be requested from them and how long it's going to take.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. If you're just tuning in, I am your host, Charlie Schrem, and you're listening to another epic episode of The Charlie Schrem Show, where together, twice a week, we get to dive deep with some of Bitcoin and crypto's most influential leaders, the soldiers, those who are trailblazing right now, building right now. We get all sorts of guests. A lot of fun stories come out of this. Connections are made, complexities are unraveled, and we can finally understand those like hard concepts and sometimes trade off of them or make the right decisions, not get scammed. A lot of the times you guys are just listening to the show in the car while doing some work, maybe riding your motorcycle. Some people tell me, yeah, Charlie, I'm listening to your show. I'm riding my motorcycle across the whole United States and I'm just have it on and it's just beautiful to listen to. So to my friend listening out there, listening on your motorcycle, thanks for listening today. And Paulina Yushkov, thank you so much for coming on the show. And you are at ETH Denver right now. You know, you make me look good because we're getting, all listeners, we're getting someone on the ground at ETH Denver in the moment. She ran to a studio so she can come and talk to us today. You are the head of commercial at Ramp Network. If you're following kind of the news on Silvergate today, over time, we know that those on and off ramps, what you do, you have the most important job, the most important company in our whole industry. Going back to when the industry started, I know because my company, BitInstant, did something similar to you, but we were back in 2011. But the on and off ramps, literally, you're calling yourself the Ramp Network to get in and out of our industry, connecting where our money is to where we want to get to where we want it to be. Not just money, but data, NFTs. We want to be able to enjoy the augmented reality world. We want to be able to participate in crypto land and do whatever we want to do. It seems like over time, this solution had to be a custodial one, because how are you supposed to get money from one place to the next if someone's not custodializing it or centralized? And we've like veered towards all of these centralized exchanges, especially over the last year. And that's where we saw like the FTX and the Celsius and all that other stuff happen. Do you still have difficulty even opening up bank accounts or continuing to maintain some of these connections that you have, especially in countries where their banks may not understand what crypto is? Paulina, you are the head of commercial at Ramp Network. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks, Charlie. Thanks for having me. And yeah, coming to you from Denver, much warmer than it was last year. I'm very happy about that. It's also much more crowded than it was last year. So we can definitely see that mass adoption happening right in front of our eyes. And I do really appreciate the topic that you've brought up. Non-custodial onboarding has been the focus of what we've been doing it for the very, very beginning. So I do feel very partisan to that topic. This is my suggested, only recommended way of onboarding into crypto through a non-custodial on-ramp.
Wow. Like how? How can that possibly be non-custodial?
So what we're supporting is we're supporting the onboarding directly to users' wallets. So instead of onboarding to a wallet that is custodied by an exchange, you onboard to your own non-custodial wallet. So whether you hold your funds in Trust Wallet, MetaMask, Rainbow, whatever, you can top up those wallets through Ramp. So you don't need to store the assets with Ramp. You just use Ramp as a ramp into crypto. So we don't hold users' funds. We let them onboard where they want to. We don't manage those funds, and we make sure that that full onboarding process is non-custodial and risk minimized.
And you're also allowing your applications to be integrated in others' applications. They never need to leave, essentially.
Yeah. The objective behind that was to... So why we did Ramp is... why we actually started Ramp was to foster that use case-driven adoption. So we wanted people to be able to use their crypto as soon as they want to. If they want to go play a game that is crypto-enabled, we wanted them to have instant access to cryptocurrencies when they needed that. Basically, from day one, we devised a solution that would live seamlessly within third-party applications. So we devised something that's going to be easy to integrate, easy to manage, that would blend very nicely with the application's flow, and would manage all the hard work related to fiat to crypto onboarding, because that part is just not easy. It's never been easy. This is why custodial exchanges are dominant when it comes to on-ramping. Because doing that in a non-custodial setup gives you increases the difficulty level on the from the beginning. And what you mentioned about, you know, getting access to bank accounts and just doing business as a crypto company, this is difficult. This has been difficult when we started 5 years ago, and it's difficult still. The onboarding processes for crypto companies are still extremely painful. And it takes weeks to get onboarded to a bank.
I remember going back to 2011, opening up bank accounts for our company a bit instant. It was like you'd have to, we were a similar company as yourself, and we enabled people for 2 years. We were the dominant place where people bought and sold Bitcoin, because you'd had, the only other exchange at the time was Mt. Gox. And that was the only other place. And no one really wanted to wire money into someone's personal bank account. So we launched BitInstant, my partner and I, and we were very similar in that we made deals with various payment processors around the country and North America, and enabled people to go into local banks, pharmacies, grocery stores, deposit cash or a check in some instances, and then get their, through my software, get their Bitcoin instantly in their own wallet. And I remember the investors wanted us to launch our own wallet. And I was a very young, I was 22 years old. So I didn't understand the concept of customer capturing and all these different business sense things that you learn when you go to a really good university, or you get to work at another startup and you can work under someone really brilliant. I didn't know any of these things. So I gave a lot of pushback on even launching my own wallet, because I didn't want the perception of holding on to other people's money. And in fact, that was so anti what Bitcoin meant to me and all those early Bitcoiners all those years ago, was not your keys, not your crypto. I don't want to hold your crypto. It creates a huge liability for me, and it goes against everything we're doing. And that's what we saw the last 2 years. These on-ramps and off-ramps that offer services to hold on to our crypto broke, and they failed.
Yeah, that's our take as well. We never wanted to go that route. Of course, the wallet topic is surfacing here and there, but something that remains the utmost priority is to keep it non-custodial. This is the primary way we operate. We prefer to work with non-custodial wallets and teams. Our work with custodial services is quite limited, simply because we know that there are way more risks involved with that. I've been here since 2017, so I've seen the two bull runs, the two bear markets, and I see some joint patterns there. I think very often this is putting trust into something that is not trustworthy at the beginning. And I saw the unfolding of, the FTX situation, and, what happened with Celsius before. And they all have very similar issues at the very bottom. So not your keys, not your crypto. If you're not storing your crypto on your own, you don't really have full confidence and it's going to be there. I'm not preaching that being non-custodial is perfect. As yeah. It's so complex and the onboarding is...
It is. I mean, I
it's quite far.
I have a box here full of hardware wallets. I mean, literally, I have drawers full. I probably own one of every hardware. Anything physical, Bitcoin or crypto related, I want one. So I even have a Satoshi bobblehead. I got this Bitcoin sign. I have art, all Bitcoin and crypto art all over my house, memorabilia, things like that. There's a Bitcoin museum, a crypto museum someone's launching. I'm going to donate all this stuff. But no, you're right. It's like being custodial creates a lot of difficulties. When someone's buying crypto, there's a lot of fraud and there's a lot of scams. And one of the things that we lost a lot of money to at BitInstant was that we had people scamming other people with Bitcoin, but then they were buying that, they were forcing their customers. So like someone set up a website saying, I can sell you any exotic pet. We call this the pet scam.
Yeah.
And people literally like, they advertise like, what do you want? You want a zebra? You want an elephant? You want a tiger? You want like a giraffe shipped to New Jersey? This website would sell it. They had a price and it was all in Bitcoin. This was 2012 now, maybe early 2012. People would buy these elephants and then they would direct people to go to BitInstant to buy their Bitcoin. And then they would send the Bitcoin to there and people don't understand what Bitcoin was. So we were on the hook for this pet scam. Like people were coming to us like, where's my zebra? So how do you probably have a much, much more, the things that you deal with are probably so much more advanced. You have intelligence platforms that I see you have. Like what kind of like crazy scams do you get that you have to like constantly being on the defense for?
So I guess 10 years later, more than 10 years later, and the same pattern exists. My favorite are the pharmacies. There's lots of pharmacies selling all kinds of drugs and they're not, it's really not like, you know, selling hard drugs or anything like that. It's mostly about things that are like paramedicine and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And there's the same model as in you're receiving a link to execute a transaction and send it to someone else's wallet. And the thing is, we're still fighting with a lot of misunderstanding about what crypto is and how to use crypto. So what we're trying to do, what we're trying to build within Ramp is to make sure that journey is fully understandable to people who use Ramp. So
okay.
We're making sure that they know what they're doing, that they're aware that they're sending crypto, that they're aware that they're buying crypto. We're making sure that the process is sometimes explains things in too much detail. Maybe sometimes it's a bit too much educational, but we do believe that at this stage, it's so worth it. If you're doing the transaction first time with Ramp, you're going to be seeing a lot of prompts saying, hey, this is a crypto transaction. You're buying crypto to your own wallet. Do not send crypto to somebody else's wallet and so on. Simply because we're still finding that kind of frauds that you've mentioned. Of course, besides that, we've seen much more elaborate scams happening in crypto right now. And we've seen operations happening across multiple banks, multiple crypto exchanges, multiple crypto on-ramps, seeing the same kind of patterns. I think one thing that makes this, that lures people towards centralized onboarding is that sometimes their UX can be better. Because for the centralized crypto on-ramp, you need to implement all of those fraud protection methods into your very short flow. So it takes a lot of detailed work on the UX not to break the flow with all the protective measures you need to apply. And we've been working on that tirelessly for the last 3 years, I believe. And we're still very often making a sacrifice saying, it's going to take us longer if we implement both the protective measure and the UX controls, but let's do it. Let's not cut corners. Let's not sacrifice what we believe in. We want to make this good for users, but we also want to make it secure. Because that security is not just about our balance sheet. It's also about the credibility and the stability we're giving to our partners. One of the main value propositions of Ramp is that we're going to help our partners grow with us. So we're going to adjust to their technological updates. If they're going to move to layer two, we're going to move to layer two with them and so on. And we want to make sure that they can depend on us. And being dependable means that we're not going to be rug pulled by Silvergate. We're not going to be rug pulled by any other US bank account. We're not going to be affected by any regulatory action. So being very diligent with what you're doing is what we're offering to the partners. So granting them that stability through very, very careful actions.
How many jurisdictions do you operate in?
We work in 160 countries and territories, more than that. We work in the US, we work in Europe. We're just expanding our operations towards Latin America very slowly, bit by bit. We've been around for quite a while already. And I think the biggest move we did was moving from, you know, just operating in Europe to operating globally. That was a massive, massive move that happened in 2021. And since then, we've been slowly increasing both the coverage and the quality of the flow. You know, not every payment method would work equally well in every region. Sometimes cards just don't work. Sometimes you need alternative payment methods. And I'm trying to work on both the horizontal coverage and sort of vertical coverage to make sure that that flow is more resilient. We're still going against banking institutions that flat out ban their customers from integrating with crypto merchants. So it's not as easy as integrating.
How do you deal with that?
So it depends. So sometimes it's enough to just establish a good relation with a bank and tell them, hey, we're regulated. This is our statement. We're supervised by FCA, by FinCEN. They know us. They approve of us. Here's your credibility stamp. Work with us. And sometimes it does take a lot longer and it's tied to a country level regulation.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's not something we can affect directly, but more through educating the banks, educating policymakers.
It feels like during the COVID years, when we had that big bull run, it seemed like we were past the days where if you'd get a wire transfer from Coinbase, or if you would want to send money to FTX or something, your bank wasn't shutting you down. I still am losing bank accounts all the time as just being a crypto entrepreneur myself. Anytime you buy and sell crypto with credit card, you're at risk of the credit card shutting you down. And that's what you're alluding to. Every time you buy and sell through an exchange, certain exchanges, especially if they had word Bitcoin and crypto in their name, there's a risk. That's why Binance sends wires from BAM trading or whatever. There's, our bank accounts were shut down as a company years ago. It's a very hard job that you have. And like you said, it's an interesting thing. It's almost at a national level, it sounds like. It's I hear about this thing on crypto Twitter and a lot of people heard about it too. It seems like there's this Operation Choke Point 2.0 of this silent directive of shutting down the bank accounts and just choking out all crypto companies and things like that. Is there any reality to that? Because it kind of feels like it sometimes.
So just within the on-ramp space, we have seen cases of being rug pulled by the bank, just by the bank account being closed, with a day's notice, with no proper warning, just because you're operating a crypto company. It was one of the first risks that we've identified at Ramp when we started working on that. At that time, there was a similar company to us that shut down just because of that, just because they lost their access to bank account. And what we found out and what we decided at that moment is that we're never going to have just one bank account. And through that, we'd make sure that we have replaceability on that one. They do happen, and they do happen more frequently right now than they used to happen in the past. So making sure that you're resilient and that you have backup options and you maintain good relations with your banking provider is really essential. And that relationship with the banking provider is primarily based on how well you fight fraud, how well your protections are, how well your governance structure is. So we're focusing on making sure that this is our priority.
And that's
that again addresses that stability that we're offering to our partners and our users.
I'm really excited that this podcast, The Charlie Shrem Show, is now powered by Waxman. I think I met the CEO, David Waxman, back in 2015 or something at an Ethereum meetup, and he told me that the future belongs to the fearless. And that is why they are producing the show right by my side. What an amazing team we have now. It's so amazing. You guys have been hearing some great updates, have been following along. If you don't know, Waxman is the leading global strategy and communications firm advising the next generation of companies in Web3, disruptive technology, Bitcoin, crypto, fintech, artificial intelligence, and venture capital. Waxman's clients are ambitious leaders and businesses that are on the frontier of this whole new economy because they really do believe that the future belongs to us and we're the ones building it. With services across everything from digital marketing, public relations, social media, investor relations, financial communications, recruiting, and public affairs, they're helping companies and individuals like myself seize the business opportunities that we deserve, overcome challenges that we all are going to face, and achieve sustained success. Head over to Waxman to learn more. You guys are going to love them. We have them in the show notes. Check it all out. It's WACHSMAN.com. That's WACHSMAN.com.
And so, okay. So a lot of it comes down because when the banks look at this, they're like, well, someone's doing a PayPal transfer or a Venmo through like some sort of, they trust that PayPal has like some sort of risk mitigation platform to deal with fraudulent transactions and like stolen bank accounts and such like that. We never had that. Like we were just at that instant on the defense. We were, you know, part of our process was you had a barcode and you'd go to the pharmacy, you'd hand the cashier the barcode that had our logo on it and like $100. And then when they scanned the barcode within 20 minutes after you gave them the cash, you'd have your Bitcoin. We had to like write on the barcode, if you are buying a exotic pet, please call us. Like, because we didn't know. So like if I'm Charlie and I'm going to Ramp today, I saw that I can go there. It's very nice. I can choose where I live, my method of payment. And then you immediately allow me to like deposit my address and go through this process of buying crypto. When are you starting the process of like checking who I am or not just like my driver's license, but the intelligence that I'm not doing something fraudulent related? Like what's that process like?
So that happens throughout the entire process. So when you start the transaction, that is already happening. We're trying to check how much we can early stage. Then we're of course processing to identity verification. So that happens in most cases where when you're typing in your crypto address, we're also verifying that how this is this tied to anything that is too risky for us or not. It's actually more interesting when you look at the off-ramping side of things. So when you're buying crypto, you're to mostly verify the identity of the person. And when you're selling crypto, you need to check the legitimacy of the funds that are being sold through.
Interesting.
So we just recently launched the selling platform. I'm going to do a short selling pitch because my team's going to kill me for not doing that. So we just launched this platform for Ramp. It does work in Europe, it does work in the US, and it does work globally. So we support both payouts to cards, and we support payouts to ACHs and real-time payments. So it's a really good offering. Both are, yeah, it is live. It's been live since December, American part, since January, Europe and the rest of the world part. So
this is so cool. Global I'm coverage. Use this.
Go for that.
So I got to use coverage. It. Request the demo. Is that what I have to do?
No, you can just go to ram.network.
/sell. Oh, look at this.
Yeah, and then they're going to be able to run the transaction. We do support, I believe, more than 30 tokens from day one. So that's a pretty big coverage there. And you're working on expanding that, working on adding more fancy tokens, working on adding the onboarding for layer twos and more advanced solutions there. So that's the case. And for the off-ramp part of things, checking of the transaction is actually more subtle because you need to do the KYT. You need to check the transaction. And you need to check the legitimacy of the funds that are being sent to Ramp. So that is actually more advanced, more interesting on that side because you get to track what's happening on the blockchain. Here you're entering some advanced blockchain analytics.
Yeah.
And you can do more than just identity check, you know, checking against sanctions and stuff like that. So this is where it gets more complex. And I think that one of the most popular scam cases that we're seeing with both buying and selling is that link that you mentioned, someone sending you a link to perform a transaction, send the crypto to them.
Yeah.
It's still difficult to root out the cases like that. This is mostly that people are getting scammed based on that and they're sending crypto to not their own account.
But people know what crypto is. There's nothing you could do. How much can you do about that? You're not responsible for being everyone's caretaker about how they're spending their money.
That's true. You're not responsible for that. And crypto is about responsibility to like being responsible to own your own money.
Yes. That's, say that again.
That's the thing.
That's literally what this is about. Bitcoin and crypto to me, you just said it, is about learning how to be responsible for your own money. And that's made me how to learn how to be more. I'm writing that down.
That's cool. I'll quote me there for sure. So I think it's mostly about that. It's about being responsible about your own funds and resources. And what we do at Ramp, we do not want to teach people like this is good, this is bad. But we do want to give them a system that is secure and safe for them. So if we see that we can educate our users on how to do those transactions better, we're going to do that. Something that we also pay a lot of attention to is making sure that even people who are making, you know, are consciously executing the transactions or are consciously buying and selling crypto, that they're not getting scammed just because they don't know what's the deal with on-ramps. So what we pay a lot of attention to is what we put on the pricing. So I think one part where on and off-ramps makes most money is the spread.
Yes.
So like nobody really controls what you put in the spread. There's no customer protection tool that.
No, it's like we'll give you whatever we can give you whenever we get your money, and you don't know what it's going to be. And you can pay an extra amount to lock in your rate. But at BitInstant, I had the scene. We can never guarantee a rate to people because it's from a software perspective, from a physical time of value of money perspective, I never solved that. We would tell people it was unfortunately a floating rate from the time that you deposited your money for like 12 hours or something like that. Because I didn't know how to solve that.
So in our case, there's both fixed and floating rate, depending on what kind of payment method you're using. If it's an instant payment method, we're going for the fixed rate. If it's going to take longer, then it's floating rate. But what I mean with that is because this is such an unpredictable thing, what rate you're going to give and the markets are so volatile, companies are abusing that power. So they're consciously adding way more to the spread that they should be doing just because they know it's impossible to check that. So we're trying to educate people on that, saying that spread is additional source of fee for majority of the teams. Make sure that you check your transaction rate. Make sure that you at least take one look at CoinGecko before you're making that transaction. Look at this one, see what kind of rate you're getting, and then continue with your transaction. What we're trying to give to our users at Ramp is that transparency and clarity of what will be their transaction size, what's going to be their transaction fee. We really want to make sure that this resonates well with them and that becomes a part of their crypto onboarding, that they're aware of what they're paying for.
You alluded to this process a little bit before too, but what is that process like? Because part of the problems I see with onboarding is because they don't know how much compliance they're going to have to do for you, that you don't know where it's going to end. I've used some of these other ones, and then you have to do the whole face scan of verification, upload your driver's license, passport, proof of residency, but they don't tell you everything that you have to do in advance or how long it's going to take. Half the time, the software is buggy. And then once it's done, then you're like awaiting verification for 3 days. So you're waiting for someone to approve everything. So what was the point anyways? It's just this cumbersome process. And so, how do you solve that?
So it's mostly about making sure that you qualify the user in the right way. So you put them in the right category and they're being assigned the right level of required KYC verification. There's nothing I hate more than being asked for additional verification once I complete the transaction.
Right.
I feel like I'm like super happy. I complete the ID scan. I'm good. I paid. Waiting slow, and then it's like, oh, we need a bit more from you. So we're trying not to do that. We're trying to evaluate how much we're going to need from the user and let them know early on, let them know upfront what's going to be requested from them and how long it's going to take. We do have cases where verification takes longer. It does happen. But on average, that should not take longer than 2-3 minutes. 2-3 minutes is still doable. Right. It's not perfect because you would like that process of moving between fiat and crypto to be basically invisible. What we envision as the future of Ramp is making sure that that barrier just does not exist, that you can spend easily in fiat worlds and crypto worlds. That does not make a difference where you put your money at. But it's not the case here. We're not there yet. We're working towards that. But right now, we're handling with 2-3 minutes before we get to 2-3 seconds.
Yeah. The few minutes to few seconds things is everything.
Yeah.
You're out at ETH Denver right now. Primarily, anyone who wants to interact with anything crypto is probably using some like MetaMask or Core app or some sort of variant, whether it's their Ledger software open, you know, or they're using the Trezor, they're interfacing. Is the browser extension the future? And I know it's a little bit of a different question, but you're interacting with retail customers on a day-to-day basis, on a minute-to-second basis. So your user interface and how you fine-tune it, every color, the location of every pixel, I'm sure you guys sit and discuss and spend hours about that. I know you do. My question is, like, how do you solve some of those answers? How do you know what the crypto customer wants when me as a crypto customer, I don't even know what I want?
I think there are two elements to that. One part is we use crypto. Of course, it's not possible with a bigger company, but people working on product, people working on business development at Ramp, we do use crypto on a daily basis. I spend my morning, because I'm jet-lagged right now, I spend my morning checking how bridging works for different layers right now and checking out how basis is so that the Coinbase L2 is working. So we use crypto on a daily basis and we make sure that our wishes, our comments are being factored into the product. So we're building a product that we would want to use. That's the first comment there. Second part is mostly about being able to sometimes foresee what's going to be happening on the markets. So not necessarily go for the current hype. Don't spend all of your time on NFTs, but maybe look beyond that. Look what's going to be the ultimate utility function for NFTs, what's going to be the target feature for a given bridge or a given chain. Look a bit beyond that and try to match your product to what's going to happen on the market.
What are you seeing? I mean, what are you seeing downstairs at ETH Denver? Like, anything surprising you, anything you didn't see that you didn't know before that's out there that's so cool?
So as usual, every year, I'm surprised by how many projects are there that I don't know. So every year I'm surprised by, okay, there's more of us. That's a good thing.
Yeah, that is
something
a good thing.
Back a few years, I knew everybody at those conferences. And right now it's like, there's a lot of new faces, a lot of new faces. And like at some point, like, okay, I know less and less people at that point. And that's a good thing. When it comes to more on the new things in crypto side, I think for me, the thing I wanted to understand during that conference was the news about account abstraction. The gossips that came from Huron Foundation about the Shanghai update, about account abstraction, and trying to understand how that would impact the growth of the community, how that would impact the wallet experience. I'm happy that it happened, but it's still only on the application level. So it's not on the protocol level. It's not something that we're hoping for and looking forward and expecting.
Oh, but it's not. So this got approved yesterday, right? And I thought it was going on the actual Ethereum chain. What was the...
ERC the whole Shanghai app. I think it's 447, 3447, something like that. I don't remember the exact number, but the main update is mostly about sharding. It's not really related to account abstraction. What relates to account abstraction is that they sort of added the option to do account abstraction on an application layer, which is the same thing, similar thing to what Argent or GnosisSafe are doing. Something that we already have, but was not included as a basic stuff or something like this. So what we're looking forward is having that, but on the protocol layer, something more complex, more advanced, and more groundbreaking for our Ethereum community.
That's a huge deal. But at the same time, it's nice to see like constant updates and things like that and launching. Like, I didn't think Ethereum personally would be where it is today simply because so many different protocols were trying to be Ethereum killers. And I didn't think that the merge would happen ever eventually, but it did. And so the fact that that got through, and it seems Ethereum is a lot more decentralized than it's ever been. Although I'm not fully sold on proof of stake, you know, my hat's off to the Ethereum developers. Speaking of GnosisSafe, we had Christoph on the show here. We released the episode and he's at ETH Denver too. We just released that episode.
Yeah, I saw him at the booth yesterday. So it's all friends and family.
Yeah, it really is great. Like you said, it's cool because I remember walking around conferences or the one conference that was, and the only other competitor, so when BitInstant launched, the only other real competitor that we had, Coinbase, and they had like launched a few weeks before. And so they were just nothing. It was just Brian and no one even knew what Coinbase was. It was just some guy who was working at Airbnb, launched this company, you know, similar to what Coinbase looks like now. But I looked at him, I was like, this guy is going to be the end of me. And I was right because he just approached Bitcoin from a product level. And BitInstant was launched out of a necessity. We were like Band-Aids and rubber bands put together to connect the legacy financial system with this new Bitcoin ecosystem. We were like Netscape. It's just legacy. And I was really bitter about that for a while. But Brian, I know you're listening. I'm okay about it now.
Hi, Brian. Good that you're listening.
No, I love the Coinbase folks. We have someone from Coinbase on the show once every 6 months or something like that. But wait, like I was saying earlier in the show, to kind of bring it all back together, you have the hardest job because most people can just focus on the cool crypto products that they're building. Because once someone's in crypto land, once they're holding on to Bitcoin or ETH or USDC or whatever it is, once they have the crypto, then whatever they do with it, it's the responsibility of the person. And it seems like regulations are going to be going that way too. So if you're building a DeFi protocol, you don't have as much to worry about as the payment processors and operation choke points. So as the bad ones have fallen, ones like yourself that have to maintain the good relationships and everything like that, it's a hard job, but it's also a good thing. It's also good that the good companies are still going to be around. Someone was asking me the other day, it's like, how do I buy crypto? Other than Coinbase, I don't even know where to recommend people to. There's no one left standing.
Well, you should definitely give it a go and try buying or selling with Ramp, whatever works best for you at that moment. I love the fact that there's a lot of competition on the on-ramping, on and off-ramping space. I've been there, when the first big on-ramps were created. I met the founders from Transact and MoonPay. And despite very heavy competition there, that's a bit of a bloodbath. We're so very, very appreciative of what we're doing because we're pushing the adoption. We're pushing each other to better, to provide better payment methods, to provide better coverage. And that eventually drives better adoption for the entire community and drives better services for the entire community. So my best to the teams there. We're always meeting and having lots of fun on conferences. So it's a great thing to work with them together on pushing that the quality of those services ahead. I think like one thing that is missing from crypto in general is that SLA, is that you never really can depend on anything. And having really good competition in the field makes you want to push yourself and actually give your customers that guarantee that you're going to be in service, that you're going to provide a timeline on funds delivery, that you're going to be really clear about how much you're charging and so on.
It's beautiful. Well, Paulina, thank you so much for taking time out of your conference experience, coming on the show and spending an hour with us. Have fun at the event. They're usually so much fun. Just from following TikTok, there's so many concerts and fun things happening. I love crypto culture. It's just, it makes us like validates why we work it so hard every single day.
Yeah, it's good to have some fun after the terrible fall that we had.
Yeah.
The last one was just abysmal. It's great to see the conference season bring back up the fun and enjoyment and that joint passion for driving the adoption here.
We'll see you later.
Amazing. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for coming on the show.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.